It's Monitor 65. I'm your host, Barry Nelson.
Time for me to put down my thimble. Time for me to go fill my cup. Quick like Jack, but twice as nimble. I've been down, now I gotta go up. My share of warm caresses and my share of innocent chat. Time for me to come out from under. Time for me to give me a shove. Stand aside and watch my thunder. I'm on my mark, I'm set to go.
Nancy Wilson, her song, It's Time for Me.
Do you take a coffee break where you work? I do. And does it always seem to be over too soon? Well, mine doesn't, because I found a way to stretch it. That's right. I found a way to stretch my break. And it's so easy. When it's time to go back to work, I top off my coffee break with a stick of Juicy Fruit gum.
It's true. Topping off your coffee break with Juicy Fruit gum may not actually add extra minutes to the break, but it does stretch out the enjoyment. You go back to work refreshed, and chewing Juicy Fruit helps keep you refreshed on the job. The little energy boost you get from Juicy Fruit makes the work seem to go faster. If that isn't stretching a coffee break, it's certainly the next thing to it. Try it and see for yourself. Discover how you can stretch your coffee break when you top it off with delicious Juicy Fruit gum.
Merriman Smith went to Washington in 1940, and he was assigned to cover news at the White House. 25 years and a Pulitzer Prize later, Smitty, as he's known, still reports the White House news, and he's with United Press International, and his sense of humor in reporting politics hasn't dimmed even one candle power. Smitty talked about the ins and outs of political reporting, and humor, of course, with Monitor's Betty Grobley in Washington.
You write so lightly sometimes and seriously at other times. Would you combine these two facets, please, of your writing and put them to a politician? Can someone running for office, high or low or indifferent, can they be comedians? Can they use humor and win?
I think you have to be very careful how they use it. And the reason I write, as you say, lightly at times as opposed to great gravity at times, is that I think sometimes that the politician doesn't develop a round dimension until you point out some of his foibles and his human qualities, and sometimes he's most displeased by this because it's against his idea of the big, powerful leader to find out that his feet hurt. Or he uses four extra pillows, or that he eats pablum for breakfast. Why, you know, they get quite annoyed and think you're making fun of them when you're really trying to draw dimension and give them depth. I think a politician who tries too hard to be a comic in front of the American audience is going to perform a disservice to himself.
Have you seen this happen?
Yes, I've seen intemperate or ill-considered remarks or efforts at lame humor bounce back against politics.
Can you think of a case in point or several?
Well, why, as far as an unstudied remark, I think the 1948 case of Tom Dewey, he was trying to be not folksy, but I think he was. He may have thought so, but he was very angry when his campaign train backed up a few feet in the crowd and he yelled out that he must have a lunatic for an engineer. Well, this haunted him the rest of the campaign with signs chalked in crude letters on almost every freight car he went by from that day on saying, "Lunatics for Truman."
When you write something about a politician, I know that oftentimes when they speak and then they see it in print, it has, a completely different connotation. Do you find them taking you aside to find out what you're going to write? Is there very much
There isn't time beforehand, usually. But quite frequently, the political leaders from the president on down will discuss with us after we've written something why we selected certain points of emphasis. I have never had a politician that I recall of any major caliber ever attempt to make me change anything or present anything in a certain manner because they know first they're dealing with a press association man and we write for, UPI serves Republican papers, Democratic papers, independent newspapers, television stations, radio stations, not only in this country but thousands of them all over the world. And it would ill behoove me to try and sell anybody's particular viewpoint from the White House, even at the request or the behest of someone representing the president. They know better than to try.
In the areas that you have covered, people that you have covered, was there one story that you found most satisfying to you as a reporter?
Oh, I don't know. I'm afraid I can't answer that because it would be too easily misunderstood. Say an actor's satisfaction might come from a good performance, and yet you might be covering a very tragic story. So I'd say the most difficult story that required more boning up, constant study, was Eisenhower's illnesses. This may seem strange, but we had to turn into, young Dr. Kildare's out there in Denver when he had that heart attack. I remember the night after he first suffered that coronary occlusion, we sent down to the Denver Library for everything they had on heart trouble and sat up and read and read and read. And then when the big specialist, Dr. Paul Dudley White, came out, did his first examination, came down to report to us, we questioned him in his own language. And afterwards, White came into our press room and said with some amazement, he said, "I'm interested how this happened. You were interested in things like sedimentation rate and blood chemistry and things like that." He said, "Where did it all come from?" He said, "You were asking questions that I would have expected from interns, perhaps." He said, "Well, we got a lot of books out of the library and read real hard." And this amazed him that we could assimilate this much knowledge. We didn't assimilate any knowledge, really. We learned the area we were operating in and learned what to ask. That's the funny thing about that job covering a president. A lot of people assume we have a great deal of knowledge. I think if you're successful in the job, you know a little bit about a lot of things, but you're not very well based on any one subject.
I wish we had more time. We don't. We've been chatting with Merriman Smith, Pulitzer Prize-winning White House reporter for United Press International. And now this is Betty Grover in Washington returning you to Monitor.
Where we have music for you. Connie Francis.
When lovers make no rendezvous to stroll along Fifth Avenue, when this familiar world is through, will you still be mine? When outdoor barbecues are out and Frank Sinatra's getting stout, when Hialeah needs a tout, then will you still be mine? When moonlight on the Hudson's Bible messy and spring no longer tender young man's fancy, when girls go back to wearing skirts. And they ignore the married flirt. 'Cause they can rent a guy from her. Will you still be mine? When the Pacific is a lake and Betty Crocker hates to bake, and Barry Cole stays away, then will you still be mine? When plunging neckline finally stops, the Beatles buy a barbershop, and catch a gray coat and cuffs. Then will you still be mine? Right on the crest, and Bridget Bardot's overdressed. When Belafonte hides his chest, will you still be mine? And when mosquitoes do not bite, and Jackie Leonard is polite.
Is, will you still be here, dear, when I make my big return in only a minute on the Monitor Beacon? Barry Nelson inviting you to join us now for Monitor on Stage. Our performance is recorded live at leading theaters and nightclubs around the world. And we go downtown with Alan Sherman as he does his famous takeoff on that popular hit of the day.
Mommy and Dad are never nervous or mad when you teenagers go downtown. Daddy and Mom just stay at home and keep calm and watch the Late Late Show. Cause when you kids are gone, we get to spend some time alone here. That's our only chance to use the bathtub or the phone here when you're away. Besides, we're stuck where we are because you kids took our money, you kids took our car, and went downtown. Where can you possibly downtown? It's 20 after 3 downtown. What do you mean by let's room? Come home till 4 a.m. 'cause you're roaming in the street somewhere. Downtown, we would feel swell if only someone would tell us what goes on down there. Downtown, but every time we ask you what you're doing after dark there, you just say that you were poking through the tulip lark there. That's what I mean. So kids, give your folks a break, because you're driving us crazy. We sit here all night and take pills down, swallowing pills so we'll calm down, counting the hours, you're calm down, you and your fruit and your slime. Television. Then you call us up and say you've had a slight collision. There goes the car. Besides that, you've been arrested. So we gotta get up and we gotta get dressed and go downtown. Borrow a car and go downtown. That's where you are, you drink. Wait till I get you, kid. There'll be no more fruiting, no swing, no jerk, no mashed potato, no swap. Now take them out. You're going to stay home tomorrow night. And your mother and I are going downtown. And we're going to dance the tango, the waltz, and the foxtrot.
Monitor on stage with Alan Sherman, a marvelous takeoff on Downtown and the Joys of Fatherhood, recorded before a live audience. Monitors ring around the world, close-ups of people and events in other countries. According to NBC correspondent John Rich, at least two armies in Asia do not travel on their stomachs. A report on that coming up in 1 minute, brought to you by Bankers Life of Des Moines, serving America's insurance needs since 1879.
Do you know the difference between life insurance and insurance for life? If not, maybe you ought to hear what Bankers Life of Des Moines has to say about insurance for life. Bankers Life takes a long-range look at your needs. Insurance on the chance that you won't live isn't enough. Insurance must also cover you and your family as long as you do live. Of course, Bankers Life provides insurance that works for your family when you can't. Bankers Life also helps you pay for the children's education. When a Bankers Lifeman plans your insurance, you can be sure your children will get their fair start in life, whether you're around or not. It all adds up to dependable protection from a company that's been protecting people since 1879. That's grown to be one of America's top 25 life insurance companies. Bankers Life of Des Moines.
Now, NBC News Far East correspondent John Rich.
Great Britain carries its reputation for cooking right into its armed forces. After a stretch spent with British forces in the jungles of Borneo, I've decided that when it comes to bad eating, the English soldiers in the field have to be ranked right up there with the worst of them. This conclusion was reached not after joining the British straight from the delightful dining tables of the big cities of Asia, but after having spent 4 days on Quemoy Island eating Chinese army mess 3 times a day. Now, Chinese food happens to be, of all the world's foods, my particular favorite. I used to say that were I sentenced to eat only one type of cooking the rest of my life, I would choose not American, not French, but Chinese. After a stretch on Quemoy Island with the Chinese garrison, however, I'm now reconsidering that statement that I used to make with so much confidence. The first day that I and my colleagues arrived on Quemoy, the food was great. We were the guests of the commanding general in his commodious underground headquarters. After that, things went steadily downhill. Roughest were the breakfasts, served in the cold, dim light of dawn. The thin white gruel usually had the advantage of being at least warm, but the fried eggs are hard enough to tackle with chopsticks even when they're hot. And ours weren't. After Quemoy, it seemed impossible that meals could become less interesting until we joined up with the British in Borneo, the Gurkha soldiers to be exact. British officers assigned to the Gurkha units are hand-picked for their outstanding qualities. Good taste in food cannot be one of them. I recall a series of 3 lunches with the British Gurkha officers that steadily deteriorated. It seemed a bit Spartan at the first unit one day when we were served a single bowl of soup, then cheese and crackers, followed by coffee. The next day at another Gurkha unit, we were taken to a palatial villa beside the South China Sea. A Nepalese bearer, impeccable in his starched uniform, served us from the elegant regimental silver. But all we got were salmon sandwiches. A few days later, we joined still another Gurkha battalion and were invited to lunch with them. There seemed to be some delay in getting the meal started, and I realized the problem when I overheard the major tell the captain, "We'll have them make some sandwiches." "Trouble is, sir," replied the captain, "there's not even anything to make sandwiches from." Eventually, we sat down to bread and butter and coffee. A few of the officers announced they were passing up lunch, and they sat around with stiff upper lips reading the month-old papers just in from London. There's a lot of good eating in Asia, some of the best in the world, but you don't find it either with the Chinese on Quemoy Island or with the British in Borneo. This is John Rich, NBC News.
Ring around the world, another monitor close-up of people and events and foods in other countries. This report also brought to you by Shulton, makers of famous Old Spice.
Hey there, refresh your face with the good clean tang of Old Spice. a fresh breeze from the seven seas. That's the way it is with Old Spice.
Piano and a tune called St. Thomas. Barry Nelson reminding you that Monitor's World of Information is available on NBC throughout the nation. In the Wichita, Kansas area, we're heard on KFDI. Back after a short pause for all our stations.
Monitor presenting its calling card this weekend on the NBC Radio Network.
Monitor, keeping you informed and entertained wherever you're spending this second weekend in April. Glad to have you with us. This is your host, Barry Nelson. Focus on the News with John Chancellor. Just one of our informative features is coming up in 2 minutes. And a little later, you'll meet one of the stars of the new hit comedy on Broadway, The Odd Couple. He's Walter Matthau. And we're off with Jack Jones taking the lead here. It's Jack's latest hit.
I feel tears welling up from deep inside, like my heart's gonna break. And the sky of loneliness, sharp and painful, that I may never shake. You might say that I'm thinking it hard since you gave me the final goodbye. But don't you wait till that'll hide my sorrow, when I may break right down and cry. Now the race is on, and here comes the ride up the backstretch. Going to the inside, my tears are rolling back. Trying not to fall, my heart's out of the running. Too loud, strapped for another sake. Race is on, and it looks like heartache. And the winner loses all. And what the final is going to be, how I live in fear, waking up each morning, finding that you're gone from me. Taking the pain in my heart for the name of the one that I'll never replace. Somebody new came up to win her, and I came out in second place. Now the race is on, and here comes the pride of the backstretch. Heartache going to the inside, my tears are rolling back.
Why not? Did he win or lose there? Anyway, now Focus on the News, brought to you by the National Association of Insurance Agents. Here's John Chancellor.
The Mekong River plant. The size of the carrot in Southeast Asia is large, its promise is enormous, and the enthusiasm of the man pushing it is unquestioned. I'll have some further thoughts about all this in a moment.
What if you should have an automobile accident 1,000 miles from home? Would you know where to turn for help? You will know if you buy your car insurance through an independent insurance agent. There are over 150,000 independent insurance agents across the United States who display the big I, the seal of the National Association of Insurance Agents. Whatever and whenever you travel, any one of these independent insurance agents will help you if you have an accident, just as if you were back home. Wherever you are, a local independent insurance agent who displays the association seal will be glad to assist you in any way, whether you need to get car repairs or to file an insurance claim. Discover the advantages of dealing with an independent insurance agent. Remember, your independent insurance agent serves you first. Once again, John Chancellor.
President Johnson this week unveiled the carrot he is offering to the combatants in Southeast Asia. As carrots go, the president's offer of American economic assistance is a large and substantial one. There is, moreover, evidence that Lyndon Johnson has been thinking along these lines for some years, and that the offer is not simply a gimmick to be offered and later thrown away. In the spring of 1961, while on a journey as vice president, Mr. Johnson visited Southeast Asia and spoke with the United Nations officials who were then beginning to lay plans for the eventual development of the great Mekong River. It is one of the world's mightiest rivers, beginning its course in China and running through Laos, Thailand, Cambodia, and South Vietnam. The original UN study showed that development of the river could benefit 17 million people, but the president's concept would expand this so that the economic upgrading could help 100 million. It is revealing to go back and read what Lyndon Johnson said back in 1961 while in Southeast Asia. He is reported to have told the UN officials in Bangkok that in all human ventures one should have vision and plans, but the time for action always came. He said further that he could think of nothing that would help Thailand, Laos, Cambodia, and Vietnam more than working together on a river, since if they could work together on a river, they could work together on anything else. And, characteristically, Johnson was impatient that the project had not reached the action stage. Furthermore, the then vice president was quoted as emphasizing that increased military strength cannot be effective in Southeast Asia without improved social, political, and economic conditions. This is, in truth, pure Lyndon Johnson. It is as much a part of the president to push for Asian economic advancement as it was for the young congressman from West Texas who fought the private power companies to bring cheap, cooperative electricity to the Rocky Hill country around Johnson City. He now applies these theories to the steaming soil of Southeast Asia, but the populist strain in the man is consistent. He has indeed offered a carrot to the enemy, but a carrot in which he has strong faith. There is another Johnsonian approach revealed in this scheme. The United States is spending in military and economic assistance just under $2 billion a year in that part of the world. Mr. Johnson emphasizes that a good portion of that enormous sum can be spent improving the lives of Southeast Asians and the rest of the money kept at home to improve conditions here. Mr. Johnson has prudently hedged his bet by appointing a very wise man, Eugene Black, as our spokesman in the project. Mr. Black will be empowered to cast an American veto if things get out of hand. But the president's enthusiasm for the project should not be underestimated. He has offered a very real carrot to the Asians, and they would be foolish to turn it down. John Chancellor, NBC News.
Now, a message from the Aluminum Association.
Time can be a measure of quality. That's the case with rust-proof aluminum siding. Because this proven building product resists time and weather for years and years. Keep your home looking new without the bother and cost of frequent painting. Won't peel, blister, warp, or split. When you buy a new home or remodel, remember that leisure living begins with aluminum siding. See your builder or aluminum siding dealer.
Focus on the News, which features John Chancellor, Frank Blair, Chet Huntley, and Frank McGee, is heard five times each weekend on Monitor. This is the orchestra of George Martin with a tune entitled Cast Your Fate to the Wind. Thank you. Barry Golden, the author and humorist, and Walter Matthau, the actor, have at least one thing in common. Both grew up on the Lower East Side of New York. Many of Mr. Golden's observations are flavored with reminiscences of those days, and it was back then, too, that Walter Matthau began acting. He says that when he was five, he did an imitation of the landlady coming to collect the rent that killed an audience of one, his mother. Anyway, Mr. Golden and Mr. Matthau will join us very shortly here on the Monitor Beacon. Our next monitor guest is someone you've seen perform many times and enjoyed very much, I'm sure. He's appeared in about 21 movies, 21 Broadway plays, and 158 television shows. He's currently starring on Broadway in the hit comedy The Odd Couple. Despite his numerous credits, a national magazine recently referred to him as, quote, that wonderful Walter, what's his name? Walter's last name is Matthau, and he's interviewed here by Monitor host Ed McMahon.
Welcome, Walter. Is that a problem for you? What's his name?
Well, it's not so much of a problem as it is a psychological phenomenon. I really enjoy it. People take me for the butcher next door to the guy at the supermarket to someone they went to school with, to some guy in the army, to someone... have you been in the office before? are you from Erie, Pennsylvania? Anything but an actor, you see.
I want to remind you of a story that was circulating in New York a few years ago. I think it was when you were shot in the dark.
I was doing something on a polio show, what do they call them, a telethon.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And I did my stint and left the studio, and as I walked out, a young man came running up with a book and said, would you please give me an autograph? And I said, certainly. And I wrote my name, he looked at it, and then looked down the block, and in a very loud voice shouted to one of his Confederates, it's nobody!
It's nobody. Oh, destroyed by a teenager.
It's nobody.
It's nobody.
Can you imagine that?
Not terrible. Well, Walter Matthau, would you agree that to a considerable extent, and despite all the critical reviews that you've gotten through the years, that you, I guess you are kind of anonymous to the public?
I would say, to a large extent, yes. And it's very gratifying.
You like that, Ed?
I like it, yes, because it says, what it says to me is that fellow's a pretty good actor.
Mm.
He's never the same. He shows up one day as a sheriff in a western town. The next day, he's a very well-dressed billionaire in the offices of some French magistrate.
Right now, of course, you're in Broadway's biggest new hit, The Odd Couple. And the critics were really unanimous in their high praise for your performance. How much influence does an actor have in the final shape of a play? Do you have that, do you have any control over something like that?
No,
holding out?
Not in the final shape of the play. You can only make your little idiotic suggestions here and there.
Suppose a line is bugging you, a certain line that you don't like, but the author's crazy about it. What can you do to...
Oh, you can try and convince him. Now, there was a situation where Art Carney had a line, which I thought was way out of character. And even if it were in character, I still didn't like the line because I thought it smacked of a kind of vulgarity that was not in keeping with the rest of the play. And there was no need to drag in anything of that sort for shock value because the play was strong enough on its own. And I spoke to Doc Simon about it, and he said, well, perhaps you're right, and let me think about it for a while. And he thought about it a little too long, I thought, because it was 10 days later that I decided to do something about it. So I sent him a letter, to wit, Dear Mr. Simon, I... just saw your play. I think it's one of the funniest plays I've ever seen. I think you are a brilliant playwright. However, one line in your play did bother me, and it's uttered by Aunt Connie. And I mentioned the line, and the next day at rehearsal, the line was cut.
So it works. That's a good thing to remember.
I didn't sign my name. I signed the name William Blaine. First name that came in my head.
Great. I know there's a problem for fighting monotony with a play. Do you ever fool around?
Ed, there is no problem whatsoever for me in fighting monotony. I never find a play that I like monotonous. You see, a play is not a piece of work that can stand on its own. It's not a literary work, in effect. And it needs an audience in order to live. And since your audience is different every night, and since your audience does become one collective unit, it's as though you are doing something different. 50% of it is different every single night. And you can learn from the audience, and I do. And I find things that the audience is giving me every night, and I'm just delighted with it.
Walter Matthau, it's been a real pleasure and a delight for me, especially being a big fan of yours, to chat with you here at Monitor. And we hope you'll come back and see us one time soon.
Thank you, Ed. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you, Walter. Star Walter Matthau, who prefers anonymity. He better not do a TV commercial because that could make him a celebrity overnight. Monitor host Ed McMahon talking with Walter Matthau. One of my favorite singers has a new hit, a nice ballad, Listen With Me to Mr. C.
Dream on, little dreamer, dream on. Dream on, little dreamer, dream on. I get a heart full of butterflies looking into your dreaming eyes. Dream on,
dream on,
little dreamer, dream on. Dream on, little dreamer, dream on. Dream on, little dreamer, dream on.
Golden has a remarkable talent for taking humanity at large and drawing some clear conclusions on what is most important to most men. Here is the well-known author and columnist with more of his observations.
The English say God helps those who help themselves. And the Spaniards say God helps him who gets up early. April is the cruelest month, wrote the great poet T.S. Eliot. But another poet came along and wrote that in April, Rome was founded. Shakespeare was born. And the shots were fired at Lexington and Concord that made this country free. Men react differently to the same set of circumstances. Yet there are areas of our lives in which the legends, the proverbs, and the mottos are similar all over the world. For example, men love much in the same way as children, as parents, and as grandparents. Most of them pray in the same way, too. And because they pray in the same way, with the same reverence, men tend to understand another man's prayer and hold it in respect. Prayer is important to men. Food and prayer are the two delays we grant a condemned man. I'm always amused when I see spoon bread on the southern menu. The girl of the cafeteria serves hot, soft cornbread with a large spoon and tells me proudly, "This is real Southern cooking. Spoon bread is delicious with either butter or gravy. But it is exactly the same recipe my mother brought with her from the old country. She called it Mamaliga, but it was spoon bread all the same. Thus, it is really prayer, love, and food that give men a common share of humanity. The humanity must be a common one, because the fairy tales all over the world read the same." This is Harry Golden for Monitor.
Mr. Golden's personal observations on the human story are a regular feature each weekend on Monitor. Of the new musical, Do I Hear a Waltz, played for you by Percy Faith. I suppose most teenagers who do the Watusi and the swim and such think if you're 40 or more, you're too senile to do anything but the waltz. But I say be glad you're past 40, men. Women are still interested in you, but the Army isn't. NBC Monitor News is next. This is Barry Nelson.
Attorney General Nicholas Katzenbach will meet the press today on the NBC Radio Network.